Thursday edition of Locked On NBA, David Locke, along with Washington Post Ben Golliver. Today's show brought to you by RockAuto.com. Ben Golliver, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
You closed like all of your circles for all of June. You must be so excited, you Apple Watch wearing fiend.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is like, what, 6 months in a row for me. I've been on a real grind, maybe even more than that, maybe like 8 months. So I'm feeling good. I'm certainly trying to make the most out of the quarantine, and we'll see if the NBA comes along and kind of throws all of our routines all off. You know what I mean?
What's the craziest thing you've done to close a circle?
That's a great question. Well, the craziest thing I did actually was the last day of June. I was trying to beat one of my Fitbit goals, and I wound up walking like 12 and a half miles to get it done. So that was like a half a marathon almost, just walking around my neighborhood like an idiot for about 4 hours. So I would say that was the most intense, individual day that I've had. But, you know, I'm an old guy, Locke. I got a bad knee. I got some other health issues, you know, so I'm pretty much limited to walking. It's just a matter of how long I can hold up.
There's a very important story that came out about the cost of the bubble. But I think that if we're going to take a second today, I think we need to start the story today, our show today, with Maya Moore, the WNBA player who, if you're not a fan of the WNBA, just imagine that the story we're about to tell you is about Kevin Durant. You think that's a fair? I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe it's Steph Curry. Four championships, an MVP, a rookie of the year, a six-time All-Star, and a five-time WNBA first teamer. So who is that? Is that Durant? Is it Steph Curry?
Yeah, you're in the right ballpark. I mean, I think that she's probably, what, WNBA Mount Rushmore, too, when you're looking at it. I'm not the most well-versed in that, but there's like Taurasi, Candace Parker, a few others. I feel like she's in that mix, right?
So in 2019, she chose to sit out the season to instead work her entire time between Atlanta and Jefferson City, supporting the effort of Jonathan Ayers to regain his freedom because she believed that he was jailed and was innocent. And today, he gained his freedom. This is one of the most remarkable athlete stories, giving up of themselves for society, that we've ever had.
You know, guys always talk about, you know, I'm willing to pay the ultimate price, or, you know, you hear those kinds of lies. It's way, way up there. I mean, it defies a lot of comparisons. I also think it's worth pointing out, put aside the athlete part of it, how often do you see convictions overturned? How often do you see the criminal justice system sort of go back on what it's concluded? And, you know, there's obviously appeals processes and everything else, but I mean, this is the longest of possible long shots. Even just take Maya Moore out of it, right? Just say any random case. If you want to pursue this, it's a long endeavor. I've actually listened to a few different podcast series where they're trying to do similar things, where they're, you know, going into a certain state, finding evidence of bias, say within a murder conviction, and trying to get that overturned. It could take years. It could take an entire staff of podcast researchers, even just to try to get a new trial. You've got to line up lawyers at a huge expense where that, you know, obviously the client's not able to pay. So you're trying to kind of talk people into doing a pro bono. I mean, this is not a small effort whatsoever. And for her to see it through, it's just remarkable.
It's so, and by the way, like, Irons was jailed when she was arrested and charged when she was eight years old. I mean, this is just, it's awe-inspiring. Like, can you be better than you are today? Yeah. Maya Moore, like, somehow found a way. It's just really, it's a remarkable story. It's a tip of the hat. Katie Barnes wrote a long article on ESPN on it. There's other pieces out there. It should take our attention. We should all take a moment for it. There's a new movie coming out, or if it's not already out, with Jamie Foxx. Nothing's out, I guess. Just Mercy, Bryan Stevenson has dedicated his life to this, has incredible stuff on the Equal Justice Initiative. If you want to like look into more of it, there's a great, incredible TED Talk that 23 minutes of your life will be better from Bryan Stevenson. But tip of the hat to Maya Moore. So I thought we should start there. Like that is Kevin Durant or Steph Curry stepping away from the game. Like the you know, players are talking about, well, I don't want to go in the bubble because it's social justice. I admire that immensely. Like this is the answer though, if you're going to do it right, this is giving it up right here.
For sure. And I mean, like right now she's 31. So like, I mean, she obviously is retiring right in her prime. She theoretically could come back. I mean, you know, what if this, you know, motivates her to, you know, kind of pick up her career where she left off? I mean, that's a crazy thing to think about. I mean, I think that there's no real hyperbole that's too much here. I mean, to me, she's in the running for Sportswoman of the Year, right? Sportsman of the Year, those kinds of awards that, you know, Sports Illustrated and other people give out. I mean, I think that would be completely appropriate here, especially given the timing and the wider cultural conversation that's been going on all summer long. Yeah, I mean, it's big time.
All right. The other story that came out today, ESPN, that the bubble will cost $150 million. This backs up to me what I actually think has been going on here the whole time. Sure, there's money to be saved, right? So they, I think if they play, they, you know, it's about $300 million. More importantly, I think this is almost entirely, okay, not all, not entirely, but important for to discover what they can and can't do. Like, this is an incredibly important discovery phase because the we're 4 months away from having to start a season again. And we do not seem to be trending in a direction where things are going to be dramatically better in 4 months. So what the NBA learns in the next, from today when players are in camp and doing media to July 31st to playing to when they open stage two, which I think is the most important stage when they open it up. We'll get into that in a minute. Like to me, this is actually a discovery stage more than anything else.
Yeah. I mean, if we go back to March when we first got into the pandemic, right. And I think that a lot of us expected, hey, it's going to be really rough for 3 months. There might be like a 3 month or so cool down period, getting back towards normal. There could be a little push in the fall, but after that, we're going to be pretty much clear of it. I think what we've realized here, especially over the last 3 weeks, at least my conclusion, my personal opinion here, is that we reopened too quickly and too disorganized, and we just did not get our hands around this entire pandemic. And that our timeline as a country, in terms of, you know, when we're looking at this thing really fading out of our day-to-day lives, where we're orienting everything that we do around it, is now pushed off far into the distance. Talking to a medical expert yesterday about you know, a bubble that's going on, a basketball bubble that's going on for this basketball tournament in Ohio right now, she said she doesn't expect fans to be back into you know, NBA arenas for more than a year from today, not from March, from today. So you're looking at the start of the following season. And she also thinks that, you know, sports like baseball and football, where they don't have the ability to go to a bubble, she expects that those sports are going to be in big time trouble in terms of trying to, you know, plow their way through this thing without, you know, just relying only on testing. She thinks it's going to basically be, you know, more or less a disaster for them, or with really serious consequences. So, you know, when we're looking forward for the NBA, it comes back to this idea of how can you mimic a normal season as close as possible, realizing that you're not going to be able to get to normal in the short term, right? And so for the league, that's having games on television, that's creating a place that feels stable, an environment that players can actually get somewhat comfortable in, or at least turn into something that they can live with, and, you know, potentially do important things like crown champions and have major head-to-head matchups between your superstars and have something to put on TV. And so if we're, you know, comparing all the different leagues, you know, the NBA versus Major League Baseball versus NFL and everything else, I think the NBA's plan has been the most thorough. It's been the most thoughtful. And it's certainly going to be the most controlled environment compared to, you know, not having a bubble. At the same time, that doesn't guarantee that it's going to work. And so you will learn a lot if you're the decision makers by going through this process this summer, whether it works out perfectly and you're able to crown a champion and go forward and everybody validates the result and says it was worth the time, or if you have hiccups along the way, or even in a worst case scenario where you have to shut the thing down, you're definitely going to learn something no matter what.
The remember when the mayor of Los Angeles made the comment that he didn't think there'd be fans until 2021 and it seemed like an outrageous comment?
For sure. Well, look, I mean, we had a lot of different people trying to guess the timelines back in March. I remember talking to some people even before the NBA shut down who were concerned that, you know, fans being in buildings, you know, in the 2020-2021 season was going to be challenging. And I remember first hearing that and it completely blew my mind. And I thought, wait a minute, like, you know, we've never been through anything like this. We're going through it right now, Luck. I mean, we're getting our experience. We're getting our reps in this environment, and we are adapting and adjusting in various ways. And what seemed crazy in March, I think, is now, you know, somewhat, you know, less crazy. But at the same time, the risk factors remain really, really high. The Florida numbers are, you know, a very serious consideration. I think if you're the NBA trying to get through this entire thing for, you know, 3 months, is going to be challenging given the situation on the ground in Florida could get even worse here in the coming weeks. And I do think you're seeing some players, you know, including Kevin Durant, who made a comment last week, who said even if he was healthy, he would probably stay at home because the coronavirus has taken off. You're seeing a guy like Bradley Beal, you know, an all-star level player, having doubts, does he want to participate? You're seeing DeAndre Jordan say he's going to stay home for the Nets. Spencer Dinwiddie's weighing his option for the Nets. There's been a few other guys, you know, pointing to this health issue as the reason they want to stay home. It still remains a very serious concern, even as you know, NBA players are getting ready to travel down to Florida next week. And then still we have guys who aren't fully committed, who haven't said yet whether they're in or out.
I have a question on Spencer Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan. I'll give you in just a second. I have a disconnect here that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Today's show is brought to you by RockAuto.com. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto part customers online for the last 20 years. It doesn't matter whether you're a do-it-yourselfer or a pro, the prices are the same. And unlike going into a brick-and-mortar store where the selection is only what they have there and you've got to find your round peg to fit into their square hole, I know it's the opposite, but you got what I'm saying, then you have RockAuto.com is the exact opposite. Incredible selection, reliably low prices for the professional or the do-it-yourselfer, with a catalog that's unique and easy to navigate. See all the parts available for your vehicle, choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Do it at RockAuto.com right now. And while you're there, put Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us category so they know who sent you. It's amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. It's rockauto.com. Okay, so maybe I'm a bit ignorant here, but if you test positive for the coronavirus, then shouldn't you be more willing to go to Orlando, not less willing?
I think there is some concern of that you could potentially you know, get it a second time. I'm not an expert in that matter, but I do think there has been some testing along that subject. I think obviously, you know, you'd have the benefit at least of going through it, and that might, you know, put your mind at ease for sure. But I'm not sure that we know enough about the long-term impacts of this virus or exactly how it gets transmitted still or anything else, frankly, to have anyone feel completely comfortable going down there.
But, all right, I guess that's true, but you're following me a little bit on this, right? Like, there is a feeling that if you're at least immune for a little while.
Yeah, for sure. And like, yeah, you're going down there and you're thinking, well, look, I've already dealt with this. It's kind of behind me. I can kind of, you know, I don't necessarily need to be afraid of it. I know how my body responded to it. Other people might be at a higher risk than I am. I get that, but man, I still think that there's just a general apprehension, especially because none of these NBA players have been into a bubble before, right? I mean, it sounds good in theory, but you get down there and there's going to be an orientation process for the first week or two where everybody's just kind of stumbling around in the dark saying, what's my life going to be like? You know, Doc Rivers was talking to the media this morning, and he was expressing how much he wished there had been more national leadership on this coronavirus issue, because I do think everyone, not just NBA players, but basically everyone in society, is like, we have a real dearth of information that we can all kind of agree upon. Is like, hey, here's the book on coronavirus, that here's the best practices for how to respond. And you know, even things like masks has become this muddled message. And I do think that we all might be able to try to live more comfortably in this new reality if we had more executive leadership on some of these issues and a clearer expression of exactly what the best medical information is. It's not just our government, by the way. The WHO has kind of sent out conflicting information at various points that have kind of confused and frustrated people. So I don't know. I hear what you're saying, but I do think that any player who heads down to Orlando and is just like their head is spinning because of this, I don't blame them at all.
No, we talked about this last week. I think that like we're trying to do projections and what the matchups will be and all these things because we're desperate to talk basketball. And even I find myself right now like, okay, that's 15 minutes of this. Let's talk about basketball. Let's find something on the floor to talk about. I talked to Mike Conley today and it was like some of it was refreshing in the sense that like he was talking about how I think this was a good reset for him and he'll be able to come out and play and do all these things. But I don't even know like how I think that's such a unknown on how each player is going to deal with a unique environment that I'm sure Kawhi Leonard and James Harden and Giannis Antetokounmpo and LeBron James will still be the best players in the world. But like, I don't know, maybe they'll be, if you're off by 5% in this league, it's a pretty big deal.
For sure. And I think the same thing applies not only for the individual players, but for the teams that we are assuming are going to have great chemistry. What does that chemistry look like? If your offense is built on drive and kick and you really need to have your seventh best player stroke that corner three-pointer and you need to make sure that that pass is on time and on target and that requires sometimes weeks of getting up to speed and doing it, and you're in a situation right now where these guys have still not practiced together. They're not going to practice together until they clear a quarantine down there in Orlando. So they're going to basically have 2 weeks to kind of try to pull together whatever chemistry they have before they start playing nationally televised regular season games. There's a lot up in the air for sure. I guess my current hope right now, Locke, is that, if talent can win out, especially through that first round where I think a lot of times, the favorites are pretty obvious. If we can get into, say, mid-August, right, where you're, about 6 weeks into the bubble and you've kind of culled out some of the worst teams and you're down to some of those best star players and the best, kind of contending type teams. That's kind of when I'm hoping like, okay, maybe the quality of play could really take off. Maybe we're in a situation where if they can keep everybody healthy until then, there will be a real basketball on-court payoff because it'll be sort of like when teams round into shape right around the beginning of December, where some teams kind of take off and really get going. That's kind of what I'm crossing my fingers for.
The interesting one Mike said today, Mike Conley, was that, I asked him basically this question, and he said, I think it's going to be really a big question of which players figure out how to find a rhythm and find out what their patterns are and how to figure out how they're going to play in this because it is different than what they're used to. And Mike actually told a really interesting story this year about how he, for 13 years in Memphis, lived 45 minutes away from the arena. And so he would put on basically the same playlist. I'm sure he changed it a little, but and listen to music for 45 minutes. He wouldn't make calls. He just listened to music. And he came and played for the Jazz this year. And his house was 6 minutes from the arena. And he's like, I'm actually really uncomfortable because I'm in my second song, middle of my second song when I get to the arena. Like, it's supposed to be good. But I had gotten into this rhythm over 13 years of like, this is how I mellow out or this is how I amp up, whatever it might be. And this is so different. And these players are such creatures of habits. And he was talking about how quick it's going to be reliant on these guys to see who's the quickest to be able to find their habits and find their ways in this bubble. And those are the players who will have the most success.
Oh, yeah. You've got to be very adaptable. I think that's going to be a major attribute. I'm just picturing next season Mike Conley driving in circles around Vivint Smart Home Arena for like 45 minutes just to try to get himself into the right mindset. You know what I mean? Maybe he can adjust and just change his driving patterns. I guess that would run up his gas bill. But getting down there, everything changes about your day-to-day life. I mean, even things like, showers after the games. I mean, guys have routines with that, right? Where, certain players will be like the last guy to go for their team so they can kind of try to wait out the media. I mean, first of all, there will be no media in the locker room, but guys are going to have to shower back in their hotels. I mean, that's going to be weird and awkward and kind of uncomfortable and certainly a major departure. Basically every aspect of their life is going to change. They're going to try to keep something similar, but, the media obligations are going to be totally different and lessened upon them. So that should free up some of their time. But, I think that the real challenge for these leaders, whether it's Doc Rivers with the Clippers or We heard from Frank Vogel and the Lakers today, or even Giannis with the Bucks. The real challenge for them from the leadership standpoint is reframing all of this weirdness and all these changes and, you know, being thrown out of your routine and reframing that as the new challenge, which is like, hey, this is the toughest title that you might ever win, so let's go out there and win it. I mean, we heard Giannis basically say, this is, you know, this championship should almost count extra because of how difficult it will be. We heard Doc Rivers say that he had a conversation with Adam Silver where Adam Silver told him, hey, you know, this isn't an asterisk title. This is a gold star title. And so you can start to see the internal leadership spin taking place and within these contending organizations where they're really trying to get their collective group to wrap their minds around how you can spin all these, you know, these differing variables into a positive that can kind of be productive and that can be focusing and try to bring these players along together.
We'll talk more about it. Some positive thoughts from Mike Conley as well as other NBA players and continue on the floor as we talk with Ben Golliver here on Locked On NBA. Josh Lloyd is still doing great work at Locked On Fantasy Basketball, so make sure you go grab that. Today's show brought to you in part by Blinkist. That's right. If you are looking for the most unique way to get... Actually, wait a sec. It's just unique. It's not most unique. Unique by itself is unique. So if you're looking for a unique way to get more information, read books faster, and figure things out, well, Blinkist is your answer. Because Blinkist works on your phone, tablet, web browser, takes the best and key takeaways for need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down to 15 minutes. They condense them into blinks. So the other day when I wanted to listen to Bob Rotella on How Champions Think, they gave us a bunch of blinks. We listened to it. We took it in. Albert Einstein's biography, I wasn't really going to slog through all of Walter Isaacson's. I wasn't going to do it. So I blinked it. Instead, I used Blinkist to use it. Right now, you can get a limited time with Blinkist special offer for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA. Try it for free for 7 days and save 25% on your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled Blinkist.com/NBA. Start your free 7-day trial. You also get 25% off when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. It's a great way to add to your book library and get way more knowledge than you're getting right now. 12 million people are using Blinkist. Add to the group and find out about their growing library at Blinkist.com/NBA. I loved what Mike Conley had to say today, though. Like, we're going, I said, like, what's this like? He said, it's great. Like, you love to play. I love to compete. I get to compete. It's going back to our childhood when we're in the summer and all we're just doing is playing ball and competing and we're in, you know, kind of AAU setting. And I loved that approach to it. I do think there's like a pureness of competition we're about to get from these guys. And really, we forget sometimes how much what they really love is the game and competition.
For sure. And I think, like, you know, you could make an argument that, like, younger guys who are just coming out of that environment from a few years ago, they actually might be more comfortable than veterans with families or, you know, guys who have been accustomed to the NBA lifestyle for longer. You know, if that makes sense, like if you're coming into the bubble with $100 million in the bank as a veteran, the bubble is going to feel pretty weird. Now, if you're a guy on a minimum contract, who's just trying to keep a spot in the NBA, are you really going to care that the bubble is keeping you, you know, on campus for 3 months if this means like you're going to be able to try to work towards your next contract? I think you just approach that situation completely differently. So I do wonder if the age factor will kind of play through there, because a guy like Zion was doing all day AAU tournaments, across the country not that long ago. You know, it was only 2 years ago when he was involved with that. So, I do think that we've also heard comments from like a Patrick Beverley, right, where he's heard all this talk about, oh, there could be some soft tissue injuries. Guys are worried about kind of getting, working back into shape, basically, and concerned that there could be an enhanced injury risk once they get back on the court. And a guy like Patrick Beverley, who I think is sharing Mike Conley's sentiment that you're describing, I mean, his comment on Twitter was, let's just check the ball up. Let's play. Like, you know, enough talk. Let's just do this. I love that attitude. Anytime someone has that attitude, that's brilliant. And I feel the same way, by the way, about covering these games. You know, let's throw that ball up, you know, blow the whistle. Let's tip this thing off. Let's start writing about it. I'm ready.
All right, let's talk basketball for a few minutes. I apologize. It took us too long to get into the core of it. Western Conference, top seven teams. We got the Lakers are set at one. Clippers have a game and a half lead over the Nuggets. And Dallas is sitting at 7-11, only 4 games behind Denver and only 2.5 games, I think it is, behind the Jazz. Who's the team? Like, everyone says, I don't want to match up with the Lakers and Clippers. Flip it around. Who do you want to play? When if seeding doesn't matter, supposedly, but other than the eighth seed, if you had a first round matchup, who do you want?
Well, this is a really tricky question, in part because of the ethics involved, right? Where you've got a team like Denver that's had really, you know, troubling situation with the coronavirus, right? So do you say because Jokic has been stuck overseas and because a whole bunch of their other players or team personnel has tested positive and maybe they had to shut down their practice facility for a little bit here recently and everything else, like, does that make them a more desirable opponent? I mean, to me, that's where we're treading on thin ice and we want to be careful. If we're saying this, you know, strictly from a basketball sense, I mean, to me, there are seven pretty good teams. And so, like, the value of being the number one seed to the Lakers is huge, because even if it winds up being the Pelicans sneaking in and having momentum, I feel like the gap between, you know, whether it's, you know, Houston, OKC, or Dallas, whoever finishes seventh, and then the rest of the teams who they're inviting to this is significant, right? So, I mean, the easy answer is, like, you just want to have to play that eighth seed, number one. You know, in terms of another way to look at it, I hate to do this to you, Locke, but what about the Jazz, man? You know, having the Bogdanovich injury, you know, reorienting their offense, they really couldn't have seen that coming. You have this question hanging over them about, can Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert put things back together on the court? You know, to me, those are two open questions where they were a team I thought at points of down the stretch were building some really nice momentum. And now I just almost don't know what to make of them or how they're going to perform once they get down.
I think the Jazz are a legitimate team. I think the question, I think on Denver, both Denver and Utah lose the home court advantage, right? Those are the two teams that have a natural home court advantage due to altitude, and they've both lost it. I think that's another reason that I think those two teams have to come up.
For sure. I mean, the home court advantage thing is fascinating because the team that actually loses the most by the home court advantage is the Lakers, because they were set potentially to play the Clippers with seven home games at Staples Center. And now they're playing seven games in an empty gym all the way across the country in Orlando. If those two teams match up, that's like the biggest single swing that I can even imagine for any team, you know, in terms of, you know, competitive advantage, you know, within this particular environment. You know, the other team to watch, I think, would actually be Houston, in terms of maybe they're a little bit more vulnerable. The reason why, they were already one injury to Covington or PJ Tucker away from basically being toast. I mean, they went so small after the trade deadline. They are very reliant on players. Now you're coming into a situation with the long layoff. Harden looks like he's in amazing shape. I think their offense is going to be able to hit the ground running because he's so used to just kind of playing the, you know, that 5-on-5 year-round game. But if they lose one of their two, you know, quote unquote bigs, their front court defensive players, I don't think they're going to be able to stop anybody. And that gets into a, you know, a very, you know, tricky situation where I just don't think they're as deep as the best teams in the Western Conference. So, you know, you can make arguments both ways for some of these teams, but Houston, I think, is one I've got circled from a pure depth standpoint.
The one that's interesting to me is Dallas. Because frankly, they have the two studs and they're pretty tough to guard, and they have a few lineup combinations that are just incredible. And when they have Seth Curry, Tim Hardaway Jr., Luchka, and Maxi Kleber and Kristaps Porzingis on the floor together, they're plus 21 this year. And when you change that same group to Dorian Finney-Smith instead of Maxi Kleber, they're plus 14. Like, I wonder sometimes on these teams in the playoffs, and if you actually take Kristaps Porzingis off the floor, they're plus 25 with that lineup. And if you switch, you know, like, if you take Luke off the floor, they're actually plus 33. Like, they actually have this I don't know if teams are going to have to play less or more guys. That's so unclear to me. When you're playing every other day without travel, it might be less. And I feel like Dallas is the team that narrows this down a little bit and actually gets way better.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think if you're the Clippers kind of sitting in that number two seed feeling good that you can hold it, I think you're really hoping that Dallas can kind of move up out of that 17. I mean, it's not like you necessarily really want to play Houston. I mean, that's going to be a very, you know, tough series if it winds up being Clippers Rockets. I mean, so many personalities involved in there, so many, you know, former teammates and just intensity. But, you know, Dallas's offensive rating was completely off the charts. If we're trying to, you know, make this argument that, hey, it could be hard to build team offensive chemistry, but if you have a lead playmaker, you're probably going to be in pretty good shape because that guy can just create a shot whenever. I mean, Luka's not quite on the Harden level for that characteristic or the LeBron level, but he's not too far behind. And certainly he's, he can do it in any gym at any time. So that would be a dangerous team that I would want to try to avoid. But I mean, this goes back to, one of our longstanding kind of pet peeves, Locke. I know you share this one with me. I mean, the balance of power between the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference is ridiculous. I mean, if you're telling me the seventh seed in the West is Dallas with Luka versus the seventh seed in the East could be the Brooklyn Nets with Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, an interim coach, and basically an interim roster around those two guys. I mean, it's not even close. It's night and day. And so I do think that, whoever is going to have to survive this gauntlet in the Western Conference is going to be at a disadvantage compared to what's going on out East.
Well, that's the one area where I'm disappointed with what the NBA did. If there were, it's a different championship. I don't think it's an asterisk. I kind of buy the gold star aspect, but I wish, and I guess Jordan talked him out of it. I just wish we'd gone to 1 through 16, right? Like, that's what I wish. Like, let's seed it 1 through 16. We're all in the same setting. All your excuses of why you don't want to do 1-16 are out the window. Let's have this be different than a regular, normal playoff. It's not the same. There's no need to try to emulate that. So why are we trying to do that? I much would have preferred 1 through 16.
Well, and it's so clear here, right? So Milwaukee is your best team in the Eastern Conference. They got the reigning MVP and the likely back-to-back MVP, right? When does he play a meaningful competitive game in this format, right? They're going to have to show up next week in Orlando, and they're going to start playing in July 30th. Giannis might not play a meaningful game until August. If they get a first-round series with Brooklyn or Washington, and they have 8 regular season games that are basically tune-ups that aren't important, he's going to be out there running around, getting the risk of potentially of coronavirus, and go through the whole quarantine process for basically 7 weeks before we get to see him play a real team, whether that's like Philly or Miami or the Pacers in the second round. I mean, that to me, it just seems like bad business. It seems like, they could have trimmed some fat there or found a way to do better matchups like you're describing. I don't know. I just hope we get there. I really hope we don't get a situation where, these regular season games or the early first round matchups that aren't as important wind up spoiling the show because we have some positive tests that wind up, kind of hitting pause on the entire playoffs or pulling the plug. It would just be so infuriating if that's how it plays out.
Well, when Washington doesn't have Bradley Beal and the Nets don't have Spencer Dinwiddie or DeAndre Jordan, it's a new version of tanking.
Yeah. Well, imagine the play-in game, Locke. So let's say you're coaching either the Nets or the Wizards, and your guys either get to go home early after being in the bubble for a month, right? Or you've got to go win this game, and then you have to get the right of staying in the bubble for an extra 2 weeks to get yourself swept by Milwaukee. You better bring your best speech you could ever think of. You better have your A-plus material for that one.
Ben Golliver, Washington Post. I'm David Locke. Get Ben's work at WashingtonPost.com, as well as if you go to his Twitter, at Ben Golliver, and check it out. What you will see is a way to subscribe to his weekly newsletter. Do that as well. I'm David Locke. You can follow me on Twitter at Locked On Sports. Right now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of podcast Locked On Fantasy Basketball.